A look back at last night, including a crushing injury that changes the Eastern Conference and some Western Conference duels. Then, reality check. Spence Checkets gives us a trade deadline primer. It's all coming up on Locked on NBA.
You are Locked on the NBA, part of the Locked On Podcast Network.
I am David Locke, Thursday edition of Locked On NBA. Our guest today will be Spence Checkets of Reality Check. Spence has a podcast, Great NBA Brain. I'll tell you more about him coming up in a second. Let's roll through what took place last night. Indiana beats Toronto 110-106, but that is not the story. Victor Oladipo, a serious knee injury. All reports coming out and deal with it being season-ending. For the Indiana Pacers, who last year did not win a game without Oladipo, this year have found a way. But for all intents and purposes, while Indiana is a resilient group, it likely means there are four good teams in the Eastern Conference now that will all get home court advantage in the first round. The first round of the East will be somewhat of a joke with Milwaukee, Toronto, Philadelphia, and Boston, and then whomever the other four teams are just there as roadkill as they move on. No threat of losing in the first round for any of those teams any longer. Indiana just showing what an incredibly resilient group they are. Got 23-15 from Thaddeus Young, 17-8 from Collison, 13-10 from Miles Turner, 16 from Bojan Bogdanović, and they beat Toronto last night, 110-106. Toronto did not have Kawhi Leonard in that matchup. Elsewhere, big game last night to close the night. A feisty one. Utah beat Denver 114-108. Nikola Jokic was amazing for Denver. 28 points, 21 rebounds, 6 assists, a block, and 2 steals in the losing effort. Donovan Mitchell goes over 30 for the 5th time in 8 games, has 35 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, scored 11 points in the 4th quarter to shut the door on the Nuggets. Jazz got a needed win there, 114-108. Elsewhere, not a lot of surprises other than just the outbreak by James Harden. 61 points last night and 15 rebounds in New York, 114-110. Houston needed all of them. Traer, the rookie for New York, had 31, including some big plays late in that game. Eric Gordon had the huge three that closed the door on the Knicks. He had 20 as the Houston Rockets win at 114-110. Philadelphia beat San Antonio 122-120 in the other marquee game of the night. Ben Simmons, 21 points, 10 rebounds, 15 assists in that game. Jimmy Butler did not play for the Philadelphia 76ers. DeMar DeRozan had 26. LaMarcus Aldridge, who is the bellwether for the Spurs, had a quiet night. Brooklyn continues their playoff push with a 114-110 win over Orlando. The Clippers, who lost 4 straight at home, looked like they were dead, come back out on the road, 1 in San Antonio, now win in Miami, 111-99 last night. Tobias Harris, mammoth night, 31.7 rebounds, 6 assists in that game. They shortened that rotation a little bit, playing guys high 30s to get through that one, and the Clippers feeling the desperation win at 111-99. John Collins should be taking... People should be taking note of him. 35 points and 8 rebounds on 14 of 16 shooting last night. Hit 4 of 4 from 3 as Atlanta beat Chicago last night, 121-101. Charlotte over Memphis. Boy, have they ever fallen apart. 118-107. We'll talk a huge amount the trade deadline and them. And Detroit's Blake Griffin wins, beats New Orleans, who's playing without Anthony Davis, though they got good news yesterday on Davis, 98-94. If you want the injury impact on fantasy and more about each of these games, go to Lockdown Fantasy Basketball with Josh Lloyd. Now we dig into the trade deadline with that Memphis, Mike Conley, Marcus Gasol, what New Orleans does next, and more around the NBA coming up as we welcome in Spence Checkets. With those 10 games kind of wrapped up, let's put the focus toward the trade deadline. Welcome into Locked on NBA, good friend of mine, Spence Checkets. Spence and I have done radio together forever, always some of my best NBA conversations. Spence has now launched a podcast himself called Reality Check. Spence has grown up around the NBA. He's even scouted for a little while with teams. His father was deeply engaged in the game, so he grew up in it, worked in it, knows it, and is a super basketball mind. So great to have him on in an important time of the year as well with the trade deadline. So, Spence, welcome to Locked On NBA. Thanks for, I guess it's a home-and-home podcast exchange. Thanks very much for coming on.
No, I appreciate you having me, David. And just so you know, the response to you coming on Reality Check was really awesome. I'm not sure how much you were able to grab on social media, but people really seem to like it. So thanks again for your time a couple weeks ago, man. It was a lot of fun.
As you know, I probably didn't grab any of it because there are certain times when it's probably better to get rid of mentions and things of that. And you miss some nice comments because of you only hear, as all of us probably do, the negative. You know, last night was an
Before we move on real quick, can we spend like a minute on that? I don't want to spend a lot of time on that. I just want to say a few years back, I did the same thing. I just turned off my mentions and I've got to say it made a world of difference. I mean, I enjoy interacting with people, but, you know, the internet is where cowards go to feel strong, as we all know. And I did not miss, you know, all of the vitriol and all of the hate that you get on a day-to-day basis. So I don't know if you want to unwrap that, but when I saw your tweet, I'm like, yep, I feel you, David. So, I know exactly where you're coming from.
So I'll share two things. One was a conversation I actually had yesterday with my 13-year-old daughter, who is not on any social networks because she's not allowed to be, frankly, and she'd like to be. And she said to me, when are you going to allow me to be on a social network? And I said, really, this is a question of when you think it can be a productive aspect of your life that doesn't cause you too many negatives. And she looks at me and she goes, Dad, we know this is negative and we know this is not good, but it's a part of my generation and it's how we communicate. And
yeah.
I was like, wow. Mm. It was interesting, yeah. Though. And then side note to that, actually, I read a fascinating article recently that said that this generation, when they become adults, will not be on their phones because they've been so insulted by our generation, who's equally as addicted as our kids, who are always looking at their phone, being on their phone and ignoring the person sitting next to them, just as much as our kids are. We complain about our kids. It's us and the generation lower. So I think there's something that the other one, I had a long conversation with Donovan Mitchell and Jay Crowder about it and how much the impact it has on the players in the league. The last mm-hmm. thing that happens to you when you leave an arena or go to bed is you probably read your mentions and have at least a few yahoos telling you what a piece of crap you are. And you're angry.
Yeah.
So.
Yep.
I think it has a big impact. I think actually the whole referee anger thing last year was, and you and I might have talked about this, I thought it was based on the players were angry. I don't think the officials got the brunt of it, but I just thought our players were angry. And I think they were angry from the social networking.
We could do an hour on this. We could probably do 3 hours on this. But I agree. I think the bubble has to burst at some point. I think we've become so disconnected as a society, and people who are angry and just want to spread hate have so much access to others that I think at some point you're right, whether it's a generation, my son's 17, you know, at some point maybe these kids decide this is not a way to live. But turning off your mentions makes it a little bit more bearable from time to time. There's no doubt.
So let's go to the NBA. We had some interesting games take place. Eastern Conference, there's five teams that seem to be competing. Western Conference, maybe there's one competing for a championship and 12 competing for the playoffs, depending on your viewpoint on where New Orleans is right now. We'll get into that, where the Clippers are right now. As we go into this trade deadline, Spence, are there moves to be made that can be impactful? Like, is there a chance that this thing is a major game shifter? Or is this going to be a lot of talk, a lot of discussions, some big names being talked about, but probably not that impactful?
Well, the names that are being talked about are impactful players. And everything changed yesterday when the Grizzlies said they're willing to move Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. And obviously the Anthony Davis situation where, you know, and I've kind of changed my tune on players like Anthony Davis. And it's in large part because of what Kevin O'Connor did with Darren a while back. And then recently what happened with Kawhi. Like, I think New Orleans has to trade him. I do. And I understand why Alvin Gentry came out post-game press conference. He's like, look, stop asking me. We're not trading him, period. I get why they have that that mindset, and I get why they have to spread that message. But I think because of what Kawhi showed that these guys are willing to do, I mean, the money's so stupid now, they're going to sit out a year because it doesn't cost them if it means changing their destination and changing their scenery. Now, ultimately, San Antonio was able to get a good package in return, and DeMar DeRozan's played well for them. But I think if you're New Orleans, I think you do have to trade him. So I think the names being talked about are impactful, David. But, I mean, you tell me. It seems like every year before the trade deadline, we hear a bunch of conversations. We hear a lot of chatter. And it's pretty rare that you see a move that's made that actually has any impact. Like the last trade deadline move that was made that had tangible impact on a team that went to win titles was like Pau Gasol going, ironically enough, from Memphis to the Lakers in 2008. So it seems like you hear a lot of chatter this time of year, and then ultimately the trade deadline usually comes and goes without a lot of noise. But Conley's a game changer. Gasol can really help a team. And obviously Anthony Davis at his age could change a whole franchise. So the names that are being talked about are impactful. Who makes the moves, I think, is the interesting piece.
And I think Anthony Davis is league changing as well. The Pelicans have three choices on what to do here. We'll talk about those three choices when we continue with Spence Checkets here on Locked On NBA. All right, Spence, three choices. One is trade Anthony Davis at the deadline, having never offered him the Supermax. Second choice, offer him the Supermax this summer. When he says no, you have to trade him, and you have lost a ton of leverage. And I guess option three is go to the wire with him just to see if maybe you can. And as you pointed out, he can always go Kawhi Leonard, where he just decides almost not to play for a year. Or two, you know, I guess, and then there is the chance that he takes the Supermax at some point and you still have him. If you're Dell Demps, can you afford to go to the Supermax moment here?
I don't think so, man. I think they actually have two options. And look, you know, been around the league long enough and been in some of the rooms where these conversations take place, that I can tell you, and you know this as well as anyone, David, like these decisions are often made far before any sort of deadline is approached, where is he going to sign tonight or are we going to lose him tomorrow? Like, I really believe if Anthony Davis and the whole storyline, like he signs with Clutch Sports and those are LeBron's boys, like I don't know if there's anything there. But more often than not, general managers and front offices around the league, they have an idea, even if they don't know for sure, about what these guys are going to do. So, I didn't used to have this mindset. I used to be a little more old school, like, look, you signed a contract, you're playing for me. We're not trading you because, you know, you're a once-in-a-lifetime type talent. And, you know, we don't see an Anthony Davis around very often. And when we do, he's not usually in New Orleans, so they've got to keep him no matter what. He signed a deal, you're ours. And I've just changed my view on that now, man. Like, I think they've got to pull the plug. And honestly, if I'm Dell Demps, I try and do it before the deadline. I don't wait until the offseason when all my leverage is gone. Now, what can they get in return? That's an excellent question. I mean, typically the narrative, the walking line you hear from teams that are trading guys like this is they want a couple of young pieces, a lot of draft compensation, and cap space. So who are natural trade partners? You know, has he sent the message that it's L.A. or bust? I don't know, David, but if it's me, I'm making the move. I mean, I think they only have two of the three options you mentioned.
So the first question, right now there aren't a lot of suitors, but Toronto and Oklahoma City have proven you can go grab a guy for a year and a half or a year and maybe make it work. We'll see what happens with Kawhi. Paul George and Oklahoma City certainly worked. The first question is, do you think there's any chance that Boston would trade Kyrie Irving for Anthony Davis?
Yeah, I do. I do. And I actually talked to somebody who, and I talked about this last week on my podcast, I talked to somebody who is in the know in Boston, would certainly know. And, you know, he essentially said that the Kyrie situation has been more problematic than they anticipated because of the awkwardness in the locker room. I mean, look, Kyrie is a really, really special talent. A lot of people think he's a genius with the way he can handle the basketball. He's one of the more entertaining players to watch in the entire league. But, you know, when you have a guy who can walk into a locker room and basically flex a little bit on some young players because he won a title. He played with LeBron. I mean, he's won multiple titles. He in a lot of ways, it's been a little bit more difficult personality-wise because of how awkward it can be when Kyrie decides to, you know, flex his leadership muscles on these young players. And I wouldn't be shocked if they move on from him, David. I mean, with how good and how talented he is, and I'm not surprised by anything that happens in the NBA anymore as far as players leaving teams in the offseason. I mean, he comes out during the preseason, during a season ticket holder event, and says he wants to stay in Boston, and now he's causing some disruption in the locker room. We saw the other night he yells at Hayward after the inbounds play, and Boston just, they haven't figured it out. And, you know, Danny is not afraid to move on from players. We saw what he did to Isaiah Thomas. I mean, I would not look past the Celtics as far as any move being made, and I know Danny loves Anthony Davis because really what's not to love?
New Orleans can't take that with Kyrie being a free agent, and there's still so much talk of Kyrie going to New York.
No, 100%. I think if I'm New Orleans, I'm looking at Mike Conley. If there's anything to salvage left with Anthony Davis, I think they might look at the Conley situation.
And Memphis then tries to move Anthony Davis. So that scenario, Memphis is then moving Anthony Davis in another deal, right? So they probably
I mean New Orleans looks to make a deal for Conley during the trade deadline if they think they can make Anthony Davis work there.
What is so?
You know what I mean?
I dug deep on Locked On Jazz today on Mike Conley, and by the time I was done, I was scared of him.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
So,
tell me why.
One is he was not good last year, and then we all say it's because of the injury. He's not great this year either, actually. And the number that really scared me was I always kind of think the first sign of aging on a 31-year-old point guard is rim activity. So his rim shooting 2 years ago in his best year when he was 29 years old, it peaked out, was 61%. This year inside 3 feet, he's shooting at 54%. His peak year, he went to the rim. He shot 27% of his shots at the rim. This year, he's shooting 20% of his shots at the rim.
Do you think that's mostly just due to him being a little bit older and the injuries that have piled up? He's a little more gun shy as far as penetrating, or do you think there's something deeper there?
Well, I think that you hit it exactly. But so now I have a not particularly athletic. Maybe not penetrating the way he once did guard, who's a good three-point shooter, but he's at 35% this year. He has an outlier year of 41%, but otherwise has always been around 36%, and I'm paying him $32 million and $33 million, right?
It's 32.5 and then 34.5, so he's got 67 left on his deal for another 2 years.
Right, like... Memphis had no choice but to give him that deal. I'm just not sure if on another team I want that deal.
Yeah, and that's fair at his age. I will say this. I think Conley's a lot more movable than Gasol. I mean, would you agree with that?
Other than the fact that we just don't know about Gasol's player option. The Gasol player option is just the craziest deal in the whole thing. But if I'm
just... Well, and that's why...
Kevin Pelton talked about Andre Drummond for... Marc Gasol, and if I'm Detroit, I would do that deal tomorrow.
Oh, no, 100%. And I think Detroit makes a lot of sense. I think don't sleep on Dallas. I think Dallas makes sense for actually both players because you put Conley next to Luka. Maybe there's a, you know, DeAndre for Gasol situation. Don't sleep on Dallas. And you never know with Charlotte as well because, you know, Mike has this stubborn stance that he, even if it's the eighth seed for four games, he's playoffs ride or die, and they need to improve the center position. So I think that's a landing spot potentially for Gasol as well. But that player option's tough because a team like the Clippers, you know, they want to be assured of cap space, and they need to upgrade at the center as well. But if they make a move for Gasol and then he picks up that player option, that kills their cap space. So I don't know, man. I just think Conley's a little bit more movable because of that player option, it brings so many unknowns into the equation.
Conley's deal does it have an ETA on the 2020-21 season, so it could only be a 1-year contract?
No. It's a straight guaranteed deal through 2021.
Okay, I thought he signed the 5-4 where he could get out of the final year of it, but I could be wrong. I know he's unrestricted in 2021. I thought there was a chance that he could early terminate on 2021. Years I never contemplated ever saying that are right around the corner.
I guess
let's does Conley, who would Conley move the meter for? Like, who's a different team in your mind if they add Mike Conley here in the next few weeks?
Man, you know, that's a good question. I think it makes New Orleans interesting. I mean, again, if New Orleans believes there's a chance to keep Anthony Davis, because they've always been a little bit conflicted about the Jrue Holiday point to, like, who is Jrue Holiday, even though he had a great postseason last year, and he's obviously one of the best defenders in the league at his position. Can you put Conley next to him and show Anthony Davis, like, look, we're committed to doing this? I think, you know, because you mentioned coming into this whole thing, you know, in the Western Conference playoffs, who exactly is New Orleans? Where do they fit? Is that a situation where you show Anthony Davis you're serious, you try and make a run of the postseason, maybe you do something special? You know, I know Detroit's trying to move off of Reggie Jackson, and you mentioned Detroit for Marc Gasol. Is that something that could make them different in a watered-down Eastern Conference where they're trying to make the postseason? They haven't played well as of late. I don't know, man. I mean, I've heard the Jazz bantered about with Mike Conley. I think Mike's ultimately a better player than Ricky Rubio. I just don't know the Jazz are going to do that to pay him that kind of money when he's at that age and also disrupting the chemistry. So I guess the short answer for a team that I think is realistic, I think it would be the Pelicans. I think it changes them and maybe the Pistons.
I had not thought of the Pelicans before. It's an interesting it's an interesting approach. So this is your sign of the commitment you're willing to make that should make Anthony Davis want to stay. And then your worst-case scenario is after you make the deal that you still have Jrue Holiday and Mike Conley and you have this great backcourt.
Right. I mean, they have to do something. I'm of the opinion they have to do something. And if they believe that there's still a chance that Anthony Davis, because look, we haven't even talked about the fact that players start saying no to the Supermax. That is such a bad sign for the NBA. But if they believe Anthony Davis still is looking at the Supermax as potentially staying with that franchise for the next 5-6 years of his career, then right now they have to act and do whatever they can to convince him that they're serious and allocating another $67 million for Mike Conley over the next couple of years and putting him next to Jrue Holiday is a chip they can put on the table and say, look, at least we're serious. You know, we're trying here. We're not standing pat, and we haven't given up on you. Now, if they believe he's gone, they've got to move him.
Have you tried?
And if they believe he's gone, I think they have to move him before the deadline.
I agree. Have you tried to piece this one together? Like on the trade machine?
I have not.
So it's got to
no,
be.
No, I haven't.
I'm just looking at it right now. It's got to be a pick-driven. They don't have any young talent that excites you. So it has to be a Mirotić kind of Solomon Hill, Etuan Moore with a pit, with some bunch of picks kind of deal for Conley that makes them get out from under money, let them start the rebuild. The other big question on this is whether Memphis really believes, and I've heard around the league that Memphis does not believe they can rebuild. That they do not have the financial viability in that marketplace to be bad for 4 or 5 years and rebuild, which is
well, what other choice do they have?
I don't know
if they have another choice. You know what I mean?
Right. If they're in the East, they, you know, I love the conversation about Charlotte and Detroit and the fact that these teams, you know, really want to make the playoffs and they're willing to commit to make the playoffs. Like, okay, great. Like, the fact that you're struggling with that concept in the Eastern Conference is a larger statement than you realize. With that cheap shot aside, we'll come back talking more with Spence Jenkins. His podcast is Reality Check. You can check it out online at realitycheckpod.com or just search your Apple, your Spotify, whatever you use for Reality Check Pod, or just Reality Check, and it will come up. All right, as we kind of have played with the trade deadline, are there other surprises here that you think get moved as we do this primer? We've talked about the three names are being talked about the most, but is there something else? Like, does an Otto Porter go? Does a Nikola Mirotić go out of New Orleans, and the fact is that some of those players actually might be the ones that have the biggest impact on how the playoffs play out.
Well, I think Otto Porter is a name to watch out for. And look, I know the Jazz like him, David. You know, and he's on the books for 26th and 27-2, and then 28-4, which is a player option for 2020 and 2021. The summer that Gordon Hayward left Utah, I know that Dennis Lindsay and Quinn Snyder were in David Falk's office talking about extending an offer sheet to Otto Porter, who was a restricted free agent, so Washington likely would have matched, so it's kind of much ado about nothing, except we know that the Jazz like Otto Porter. And look, it's no coincidence that Washington has won like 7 of 10 since John Wall went down. I mean, look, Wall's on the books 38-1 next year. Then it goes 41-2, 44-2, 47-3. Like, they've got to do something, man. And I don't know exactly what it is. But if I'm Ernie Grunfeld, first of all, I'm grateful that I still have a job. Second of all, I'm moving everybody besides Bradley Beal. Like, everybody talks about Bradley Beal, like, oh, we'd love to have him. Well, of course, he's awesome. And he's found a way to thrive playing next to a guy in John Wall that just doesn't make his teammates better for all of his talent. So I think Otto Porter is certainly a team and a player in play. Will you allocate that money? He's only 25 years old. You know, I think you probably take a chance on him. And then if the Knicks are able to move out from, let's say, a Courtney Lee, and I know they'd love to move out from a Tim Hardaway Jr. number, if they can move out from both those two guys, it's an indication that they've got a sign from either Durant or Kyrie, or maybe both, that clear some room this summer, and we're coming. So those are another couple of storylines I'd watch out for.
Yeah, and that keeps circulating. That Durant-Kyrie went away for a while and has come back and is being talked about in circles again. Here's what's so fascinating to all these conversations, whether it's an Otto Porter or whether it's whether it's a Mike Conley, any of these players that have money left in this huge offseason coming with so many teams having cap room, someone's got to start doing, you know, teams have got to start doing the math and trying to project what they think is going to happen in free agency. Because if you have a player like a Kemba Walker or a Chris Middleton, and I'm ignoring kind of the top five guys, maybe you think DeMarcus Cousins will still be of value. We'll see how he plays. If one of Tobias Harris, if an Eric Bledsoe, if one of those players moves your meter as a team, you then may not be interested in trading for a Mike Conley or an Otto Porter or somebody with Marc Gasol if he takes up his player option, because you want to stay in that free agent market. But you got to somehow know in February whether you actually have a legitimate shot at those players in July.
And that's the problem, because there are teams that are in free agent. We'll call them destination markets, even though I think that's kind of an overrated storyline these days. But there are teams that play in cities that players want to play in, and there are teams that have players on their team that players want to play with. So if you're one of those teams and you have an indication through back channels from an agent or handlers or whatever it is, these guys have so many people around them now, then you stand pat hoping you can make a splash in free agency. But, you know, one of the things I saw today that makes a little bit of sense is, the Pacers, where Mike Conley is from, you know, both their starting point guards are going to be free agents. And can you get a better point guard than Mike Conley in free agency? If you're in a market that historically speaking has not been able to attract free agents, then you get involved and kind of go all in on one of these veterans, because that's how you add strong veteran pieces to your team, not free agency via you add them via trade. So I think the teams that will be looking, that will look to be really active before the trade deadline are teams that historically speaking don't attract free agents to their teams or their markets. And the teams that will stand pat are teams that have, an indication from handlers or agents that guys might be looking at them. And there are teams that ultimately players, tend to gravitate towards in free agency. Look, somebody at some point has to decide to take on the mantle of trying to make the Knicks great. At some point, I think somebody has to take on that challenge.
It's really fascinating. I mean, Indiana's, you brought up some great examples. So they have Corey Joseph and Darren Collison. They like them both. They have Aaron Holiday, who they really like and want to get more time.
Yep.
Now, they could trade for Conley. Then they're tied up. They have no free agent game to play. Or are they better off trying to re-sign one of those two guys at probably half the price of Conley and letting Aaron Holiday play? Are they better off trying to go get a 33-year-old Goran Dragic? Are they better off trying to shoot the moon for Kemba Walker? What's in Eric Bledsoe? Maybe Eric Bledsoe's the perfect match for Indiana and Nate McMillan's defense. There's a Ricky Rubio that's going to be a free agent at the end of the season. And so you're trying to weigh all of those pieces. Frankly, from this is where I think Conley gets interesting. At $32 or $34 million for Conley, I don't really love Jeff Teague. I don't really love Eric Bledsoe. I don't really love a 33-year-old Goran Dragic. I don't really love a not particularly great shooting Ricky Rubio. Like Terry Rozier, I think, is overrated at this point. But when there's that many free agents on the market, and Darren Collison and Corey Joseph, we're now up to seven of them, I have a hard time trading for a $32 million Mike Conley.
Unless you're Indiana and you look at the you look at the tea leaves and you see in 2 years Victor Oladipo is a free agent. I mean, you've got to look as far out as you possibly can to convince guys that you're doing everything you can to make sure that they continue to have a winning situation. And I think Indiana is a place that you could look at potentially to add a Mike Conley, because historically speaking, they haven't been able to get free agents there. I mean, Oladipo was acquired in the Paul George trade, which obviously worked out well for Indiana. I think somebody will make a play for Conley. I really do. And if you're Memphis, I'm not sure how stubborn you can be. Like, when you release information to the press, when you decide that, that this stuff gets out there, you lose a little bit of leverage. So I'm not sure how greedy you can be. I mean, I think it really is a glut of picks and cap relief. And if you can get a young piece, that's great. But I think somebody's going to make a play for Conley, and I'm not sure how much of it's going to be for the rest of the season, how much of it's going to be for future, or convincing young guys like Oladipo or Anthony Davis that as an organization, you're still committed to winning and spending money to make sure they're taken care of.
Let me throw one more team out there, and we'll wrap this up with Spence Check. It's his podcast, his reality check. Orlando, to me, is really fascinating. Because Vuk's having an incredible year.
Yep.
They have Mo Bamba. They have Jonathan Isaac. They've paid Aaron Gordon, but that doesn't mean they couldn't trade him. Don't they have to decide which three of those four? They can't really sign Vuk and then move forward with roadblocking Isaac and Bamba to move forward, right? That's not an option.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking about Orlando today. So I do think they're a team that's kind of flying a little bit under the radar as far as a team that could be active. But I just think they're so far away from any long-term relevance. Adding a veteran piece right now just doesn't make any sense. Like, I don't think they're in play for Connolly. I think they might be in play for something, ancillary, like just on the outside. But they are an intriguing – I mean, Vucevic has been incredible this year. He's a great young talent. They're obviously going to build around him. I've never been a big Aaron Gordon guy. I wasn't during the draft. And they do have some decisions to make on how they're going to proceed moving forward. There is a bit of a glut in that front court. But I don't think they're in play for a veteran piece, if that's what you're saying.
Here's my crazy one. Are you ready?
Yeah.
Mike Conley to Orlando – Timothy Mozgov's contract, Terrence Ross, who's a free agent, and either Mo Bamba or Jonathan Isaac to Memphis.
And wow. I think if you're Memphis, you have to do that.
Right. And suddenly then they go forward with Mike Conley, Evan Fournier, Aaron Gordon, and they re-sign Vuk. They're going to be pushing some tax, close to the tax at that point, but that's not a bad Eastern Conference team.
No, it's not, and you just nailed what I was about to say. I mean, that puts them dangerously close to the tax threshold, if not over it, for a team that's maybe five or six in the East. I mean, it certainly doesn't put them past Milwaukee, Toronto, Indiana, Philly, or Boston. I mean, it might put them at six.
But for Orlando,
that's why I think,
for Orlando, that would be a big deal.
Yes, no, you're right. But that's why I just think they're so far away with their young pieces. If we were having this conversation in 2 or 3 years, I think it would make a little more sense.
Yeah, maybe the deal includes a Jonathan Simmons instead of a Terrence Ross, because that gets them off the money. And if they do that, Orlando gets a little bit off the still. I think Orlando's over the tax line with a $30 million Conley in there, and they'd have to figure some things out. But I don't know. I mean, I wonder, Orlando, everybody's talking about them trading either Aaron Gordon or, you know, so they can re-sign Vuk. I wonder whether or not they just use one of Bamba or Isaac to go get themselves a really legitimate piece now. I feel like they've just rebuilt for so long. At some point, they've got to do something to be better than just rebuilding again.
No, and I agree with that. And what you're saying as far as the players when it comes to Bamba and Isaac and Vuk as well as Gordon, like that's a glut of young front court bigs that you're going to have to make a decision about. I loved Isaac coming out of college. I just haven't been all that enthralled with him. Bamba, I mean, he's so young and so raw. I'm not sure you know what sort of hand you've been dealt. But obviously, I mean, from the inside, they probably know better than we would. So if they decide to move off of one of those young pieces, does Memphis, look at that as something that they can get in return? Because if Memphis can get one or two young pieces, a couple of first rounders, and cap relief for Conley, then that's a huge win for them based on the fact they just released the information that they're trying to move on from him. And Orlando, as you just outlined, fits that bill if they're willing to move on from Isaac or Bamba or even Aaron Gordon, who, again, I don't love. I think he's fine. I don't think he's any better than average, and I don't think he ever will be, personally.
You might never score in Memphis again with Triple J and Mo Bamba back there. They'd have to definitely be
right.
But who knows? Spence, a pleasure to talk hoops with you again. Always enjoy it. Thanks so much for taking the time on Locked On NBA. Best of luck with Reality Check, and enjoy the podcast world.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate it. Appreciate the time as always.